Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and in a break from our regular fortnightly schedule, we're bringing you a bonus Iron Sky The Coming Race interview special to coincide with its US release today, featuring interviews with director Timo Wollensol and one of the stars of the film, the legendary actor Udo Kier, who in this Iron Sky, as well as returning as Wolfgang Kurzfries, also has a dual role playing Hitler. In the first interview with Timo, we talk about how he came up with the idea for the sequel, the conspiracy theory research he did for it, film's mega successful crowdfunding campaign, and where the Iron Sky universe goes from here. While in the second interview with Udo, I chat to him about what brought him back to the Iron Sky franchise, the shoot of the picture, what attracts him to the horror genre generally, and how he manages to avoid typecasting, starring in art house films, Hollywood films, horror films, you name it, Udo's been in them. Anyway, a quick warning before we get to the interviews. The audio on the Udo Kier interview is not quite so good. This is because I had to do a phone interview, but I don't feel it detracts too much from a fun, but albeit too brief chat that I had with Udo. But anyway, now we get on to the interviews. First up is Timo, and then there will be some screams, and then you'll get on to the interview with Udo. Hi Timo, welcome to New Horror Express. We've got you on to talk about your new film, Iron Sky, The Coming Race, which is obviously a sequel to Iron Sky. So when you were making Iron Sky, was it always a plan to make a sequel, and how did the story for this film develop?
Thank you very much for having me here. I'm really happy to be on the podcast, and thank you for the question. Now, let me answer you. Yeah, it was. The idea was all the time that basically, if I'm able to pull off a film about Nazis on the dark side of the moon, you know, finance it, find the production, find the crew and the cast and actually shoot the movie and then find distributors to put it out, I definitely want to do another one as crazy as that. And I had this idea about the first Iron Sky is, of course, about the Nazis and the moon mythology, or the Nazis' secret super weapon, whatever conspiracy theory stuff you can find about there. And with The Coming Race, I wanted to do a film that's more about conspiracy theory about the hollow earth, the earth being actually hollow. And that was something that I track back all the way into my teens or pre-teens, when I was reading Jules Verne and a lot of comic books and sort of that kind of stuff. So it kind of felt familiar for me as a topic. And I went from there.
And that's interesting you say that about the conspiracy theories. In terms of like developing the script and developing the film, how much kind of reading did you do about that in terms of these conspiracy theories of the Vril and the whole earth and all that kind of stuff?
Way too much. I think I found myself stuck in a very, very weird world as soon as I started to look into that. And then I started to read about, you know, books, and not just books, but also articles and sort of going deeper into the internet, sort of conversations and discussions and started to patch it together. But I also started to continue reading about the Nazis and sort of their secret technology, because one part of that story is that the Nazis got the secret technology to create UFOs from a race of superhumans who live inside the earth. So there's also this kind of links to that. So that, you know, it's quite a confusing and crazy world full of very, very crazy and weird people. But I found it also very entertaining and interesting and very very inspiring in many ways, because there's a lot of passion behind each and every conspiracy theory out there. And sort of, I tried to take inspiration from that passion.
I imagine you must have gone down a lot of kind of weird internet wormholes.
Yeah, I can tell you. My internet search history would be something that if somebody at the airport or wherever started to look into that, they would maybe be a bit confused. But I'm a good guy. I'm a nice guy, but I read about weird stuff.
I'm sure you are. Also, like, obviously there's a lot of weird and wacky elements to the movies. Where did the dinosaurs come in?
I think the dinosaurs come up. I mean, it's a simple question. Where did the dinosaurs disappear? Oh, they went to the whole Earth, of course. that's kind of the whole thing. It's not just that. It's part of the mythology that the world, sort of the ancient world, used to live inside the Earth. It also traces back into religious mythologies, which I use a lot, because the whole topic of this movie is actually, it's kind of a satire on religions, whereas the first Iron Sky was a satire more on politics, and this one is more a satire on religion. And of course, it's the Noah Ark idea that you know, destruction was headed towards Earth, whether it's a flood or, in our case, a meteor that was about to destroy all the dinosaurs. Then the real people, they decided that let's take these dinosaurs and take them into the Hollow Earth, into our weird version of a Noah Ark, and they live and breed there. And that's something that's really, again, a little bit of a religious theme stuff over there, which I also enjoyed putting quite a lot in the movie.
And the movie, once again, like Iron Sky, had a very successful crowdsourcing campaign. You must have been excited by the response that got and the thirst people had to see a sequel.
Absolutely. It's really fun to see that a crowdfunding worked with us, because we have such a kind of controversial topic and not the easiest one to explain to people and all that. But we also created a big, nice fan base of people who were really excited about the whole thing. So they wanted to really support us. But also, I think we are pretty good with crowdfunding. We know how to get people excited about, you know, crowdfunding topics and crowdfunding this and that. So that was also another thing. But yeah, it was, crowdfunding played a very essential role in us for being able to make this movie. Of course, it's not the whole budget, but it's actually not even a relatively huge percentage of the budget, but it's the most important part of the budget, because with that money, we were able to develop the story and make it into a shape that we're able to sell that into the, you know, out there to the people. And that was something that we really worked hard. So the whole community aspect of crowdsourcing, crowdfunding, absolutely vital to the whole thing that we're working.
With that in mind, how much did you have like fan involvement in terms of the development of the picture? Was there much of that?
Well, a lot. And I can tell you a lot, because already, of course, crowdfunding is one of the things, but that's just the beginning, because after we released the first, after we finished the first draft of the script, we sent it out to about 1,200 of our fans who were able to read the script and then give us feedback on what they thought, what could work, what could not work, and, you know, sort of that kind of elements. And later on, we also made it possible for the people to purchase roles in the movie. I mean, extra roles, not speaking roles, but extra roles. And they could be like a moon base citizen, or they can be a Nazi they can be a soldier on the moon base, or they can be a creature on the Hollow Earth. Up to the point of they can get killed by a dinosaur on screen, or eaten by a dinosaur on screen, depending on how much money they put. And that kind of way, we were able to both finance the movie, but also make a very nice connection with our fans. So, you know, hundreds of our fans from all over the world, they flew into Belgium where we were shooting the movie, and they had their little part in the movie, and they were really excited about that. And then, of course, we've been showing different versions of the movie, draft versions of the movie to the fans, got some feedback from them, you know, here and there, and that's also been really important part of that. So basically, the fan involvement was in the whole process from the beginning to the very end. So from the beginning with the financing, and then eventually to the being part of the shooting and helping us find the right final cut of the movie and all of that. And that's a really important part of it.
Obviously, also, this is a science fiction picture, and there's a lot of set pieces and special effects. What was the kind of most challenging aspect of making the film?
I think with this one, the new aspect which we had were the creatures, because with the first Iron Sky we had spaceships, but we really didn't have any you know creature animation there. But with this one, we had to create you know good looking dinosaurs and make them move and you know work on screen, which is business for the big films, but not for small films, because it's dinosaurs are. That all kind of creatures are like that's where the big challenge comes from. But we had a really great team of people, Pixelmondo, who had been working on Game of Thrones and stuff like that. So we were able to find a great team who were able to do that. But that was really something that I was really a bit nervous about in the beginning on how we make that work. But yeah, anything related to the dinosaurs, always tricky.
And it took... Between films, it's 7 years. I understand that there was some delays with the pictures because of a legal issue.
Yeah, there was a weird legal issue related to the whole thing, which was something that a person who had been working as an intern on the first Iron Sky decided that he owns the whole franchise or whatever. It's like very weird stuff that he started to spit out on the internet, but he was able to get a lawyer attached to his claims. And we had to go all the way to the court, where we, of course, proved that no, definitely this person has, you know, this person is not speaking, you know, that whatever he's claiming is absolutely not true. And of course, the court believed us for sure, because his claims made no sense. But that did create a delay, because we're a small company, and of course, if you create a legal problem, a lot of financiers, they say that, okay, we want to see what's the end result, because they didn't know all the things. So we had to wait. So that created like a stretch of about 18 months, which we had to basically, we couldn't really proceed too much with the movie. Of course, we did a bit, but you know, there was not a lot of movement going on at the movie for that. So that created an unfortunate delay of the movie, which then of course it wasn't just bad. We were also able to develop the movie further. We were able to shoot a little extra material for it and work a bit more on the visual effects and also on the edit. So in that way, a pause like that is good, but it was really frustrating time, because we had to be fighting with this person, but now it's done and over, and that's great. But wasn't the most favorite time of my life, I can tell you.
So you must have been very pleased when it did finally, it has finally come out. And then how did it go down? I don't know, it had its kind of fan premiere in January. How's it?
Yeah, we had it was really like when the whole production was then restarted at one point, that felt like, wow, amazing. And then we were able to, you know, zoom in through the production and finish it and we get it out. We had a fan premiere like I've never experienced anything like that. The people were absolutely crazy about it. And that was fantastic. They came again from all over the world to watch the movie in Finland. And we had such a great fun premiere. And yeah, that's basically what the route we are still on. It's as we are releasing the movie, putting it out in festivals and different countries, different territories. Now it's the sort of the important parts are coming right now, because we have, Japan release is coming up. Iron Sky has been well received in Japan. And then we have, of course, the US release, which is coming on 17th, which is something that we are looking forward a lot as well. So all of this is, you know, it's a long process, but yeah, it's getting there. It's really nice to finally get to have people see the movie eventually. And, you know, after all this troubles and all these, you know, fun times we had making this and all this crowdsourcing and all this collaboration, to finally put it together and then release it. That's really an amazing, amazing thing.
Yes. You were just saying that it was a fun time you had shooting it. What was your kind of favorite moment, your most memorable moment of the a shoot?
I really enjoyed one of the shooting days, and also didn't like that, but kind of enjoyed in a masochistic way, was when we were, the last shooting days, we were shooting a split unit. So I had another unit in a different big studio where we were shooting some of the action stuff for the chariot race and stuff like that. And then I was shooting some character stuff in the other studio for the same scene. And we were connected by, I had a different an assistant director who was directing the other set, and the other director who was directing, and I was directing the other set. And then I had to be running between two sets, phoning in. People were saying, okay, Timo, this is what happened. I cannot show you because, you know, we don't have time to send you the material, but they described what they shot. And then I had to make a decision if we shoot it again or not. And, you know, it was quite chaotic last couple of days. But it's also the enjoyment of working in a very well working set is that it's possible to do. So we basically shot 2-3 shooting days in just time of one day. And that was quite a stress, but also very, very much fun, because that's the magic of filmmaking. Everybody knowing what they're doing and then watching, and then you get to be sort of in the middle of the storm. But also when you know what you're doing, it feels amazing. It all comes together. So that's something.
It seems like it was a good atmosphere on set, that you were, had a good working relationship with all the actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a very special, it was kind of intimate in a way, because we were all away from our homes, basically, especially with the cast and a big part of the crew. We were shooting in Belgium in a small city called Lint, which is not even a big place, so close to Antwerp. So, you know, people couldn't just go home and do their normal stuff. They were all there in basically the same hotel or the same set all the time. So you create this kind of bond together, that we're all in this and we cannot run away from it, so we're gonna have to just you know, survive through it, and also created very, very close relationship with the people, because we were in the same boat. And that's really, really fun way to work, because sometimes you work in your own city and, you know, people go home after the shooting day and then they come to the set after their. It's good. It's nice for everyone, but also you miss this kind of unity of all of us being kind of weird refugees in this weird studio doing this weird stuff and not being able to go anywhere.
And presumably you'd already built quite a good relationship with some of the returning cast, like Julia and Udo.
Yeah. We already had a very good relationship with them. They enjoyed the first Iron Sky, working with the first Iron Sky. And I was really keen on getting them back on the set. And especially with Udo, it was fun, because now he was able to play two different roles, different kind of roles, which was really fun for him and for me also to work with him, because he's of course the most fantastic actor, but the most fantastic person as well. Like, there's no better person to work on a set than Udo Kier, because he's the kindest, the most, you know, the funniest, the most experienced guy on the set. And having him just sit there by your monitor, even if it's not, the funny thing is, even if it's not his shooting day, even if he's not on the day, he usually comes to the studio and just likes to sit down next to me as a director. He doesn't say anything. He just sits there and nods and tells a story here and there. It's just fantastic to work with him.
And was it always the intention to have him play both roles?
It was not in the beginning. In the beginning, I had written the role for Hitler, but I didn't have anybody I could have cast for that role. I went through a lot of options, like who could work, until Udo said that he read the script, and he said that he thinks that the best way to go is to get him to play also Hitler. And I was first a bit, shaken by the idea. But the more I started to thought and the more I talked with him, he was absolutely right. There would be nobody else that could play that role. And he did a fantastic work as a double character. But it's not also easy, because he's not a young man anymore. So he had a lot of shooting days and, you know, complicated stuff, riding a dinosaurs and, you know, running around, hitting, you know, fighting and all that stuff. But he was he's made out of steel, I guess.
That's cool. It's certainly always an engaging presence in whatever movie he turns up in.
That's it. That's what I love. There's nobody like Udo, and I'm really happy to get to work with him.
In terms of the new cast, how was it that Tom Green came on to the project?
He was actually, I had written the role of Tom, the character already for a while, and then eventually he came on board as through, I think, a mutual connection I had, who suggested that if you ever need to contact Tom Green, I have his contact. And then I snapped up, wow, that's exactly what I want for this character. I hadn't even thought about it. I knew that I want to have an American comedian to play this role, but I had no idea. And then I was, because I'm a big fan of Tom Green, who used to be already when I was a kid, was watching all of his MTV shows and later on, like his movies. And then they got this connection, and I said, okay, let's try, let's see what happens. And we send out the script and everything. And later on, he came back. He said, okay, that sounds interesting. Let's meet. And then we talked more. And I think he wanted to see if I'm an actual sane person or just some weird, crazy European filmmaker. But we met them, and he was very, very kind and very interested in the role. And then eventually we flew him over and to Belgium and shot, and he was very good to work with, such a nice guy.
Looking at various things, it seems like there's a lot going on with the Iron Sky universe. You're currently in production with The Ark. Can you tell us a little bit about that? This is like a spin-off of the Iron Sky.
Yeah, I can't tell too much, to be honest, because I don't know what I can tell. That is an interesting spin-off or shoot-off or ricochet of the whole Iron Sky universe. That was a contact from a Chinese producer who contacted us and said that he would love to make a film with you, with me. And then he flew us over to me and my producer over to China and presented sort of a story which he had in mind, which could work. And then, you know, it was badly translated from Chinese to English, and I was like, what the hell is this? But I read it, and I actually found a good story in there, and we continued developing and eventually developed a great story out of it. And then, you know, we shot it, but I can't tell you too much, like when it's coming out or anything. I think it's maybe later this year, probably early next year is my guess, but I don't know. I don't have any definitive release schedule, but it's already shot. It's the finished edit. Now we're doing visual effects and post-production for that. So it's getting nicely along.
And I hear as well that there's a Iron Sky TV show in the works as well.
Well, yeah, again, early stages. In this case, I'm writing it right now, and I have a big idea for it about Soviet Union or Russians on Mars, but communists on Mars. But I can't tell you too much about that also, because that's still very much in development. But actually currently right now, I have my writing program open. I'm sort of writing it. So it's, I don't know exactly what it's going to be yet. But TV show is a format that I'm interested in, because then you can tell a bigger narrative with that, and you can, you know, make a bit wider story with that. And yeah, that's something that I'm looking forward into.
And there's a little hint of that at the end of this film.
Absolutely, yeah. It's I couldn't go home without showing a little bit of what direction we want to take the story next. And it's got a lot of good feedback. People seem to be like, okay, that's didn't expect that. That looks interesting. So I think it's a good sign.
And I take it, I mean, are you in this expanding it out into a kind of Iron Sky universe, are you very much want to keep the helm yourself, or, you know, have other people come in and do stuff?
You know, it depends. Right now, I think it's quite natural that the helm is myself, because there is nobody else who thinks about these things. But I think in the future, it doesn't make any sense for me to be the sole creator here. I think the whole idea of Iron Sky Universe is that we have a lot of fans, we have a lot of people interested in this, and all the ideas are definitely welcome, but we have to you know, I have to. Right now, I'm still in the pro. We're still in the process of setting the base brickwork of the whole what it means to make an Iron Sky movie. But I believe that after, you know, we're done with the TV show and with the Chinese movie and everything, I think after that, I wouldn't feel at all bad if there was another person who would say, hey, I have an idea in this world. And this sandbox box definitely is open for everybody. But yeah, it's something that I'm looking forward that I can hand on the torch for the somebody else to continue or create additional stories in the world.
And will we see Udo again, or is he done for in the Iron Sky universe now?
I think Udo is never done for.
So he may return.
I would be surprised if he wouldn't. Yeah. But of course, I can't promise anything until.
Yes, until further plans are developed.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I think I just have you for a short time, so nice talking to you about the latest Iron Sky picture.
And, absolutely.
I would all the best with the American release this week, and I'd be interested to see what you do next with this next film, The Ark.
Fantastic! Yeah, it's coming out over there. So good, yeah. Thank you for having me, and thanks for the chat, and thanks for good, great questions. And yeah, let's talk more when there's more things coming out.
Absolutely.
All right. Good. Thank you.
Hi, Udo.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. Yeah. How's you?
Where are you located?
I'm located in.
Where are you located?
Edinburgh. Scotland.
Are you from Scotland? Okay.
Yes.
All right. So, ask me the question.
Okay. I shall do. So, yeah, this is for my podcast, New Horror Express. Welcome to it. It's great to have you on the show. And we're here to talk about Iron Sky, the coming race. What made you want to come back to the Iron Sky franchise?
Well, the thing is, I had a lot of fun doing Iron Sky number one. And then because it was very successful in Europe, and then Timo wrote the second one, and we met a few times, and I played, I was supposed to play the same character, Mr. Kotzfleisch, and then I said, who is playing Adolf Hitler? And I didn't know, so I played Adolf Hitler because for me it was the fun was to have a dialogue with myself when I'm riding on the moon on a T-Rex and then speaking to myself as my brother. So that was really something I wanted to do. And the second film, of course, was much bigger, the budget, and we shot the first one in Australia, and the second one we shot in Belgium, and in a studio, and it's a lot of fun, because the studio, you need a big studio, but the walls are all green, because it's green screen, and it's everything technically put on it later on.
And how difficult is that? Having things that are obviously not there, like, you know, pretending there's a giant T-Rex there.
Well, the thing is, you have to, as an actor, you have to first all put you on a kind of a crane and you study the movement of a T-Rex, and because your body has to go like the big animal, has to go left and right and left and right. And then the good thing is, in the studio, you make yourself point at the wall. You cannot just look at the wall. I have them do a little red tape cross, and then I look there, which means I focus on the exact thing what I know from the script, what is going to visualizing the people what they're going to see.
How much how fun was the shoot? I was, because it looks like, you know, from your acting performance, it looks like you're having a lot of fun acting across from yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? What is that? Was that the case?
Oh yeah, I had a lot of fun, and I knew I would have fun. Otherwise, I wouldn't do the film. I mean, I did a film which got the jury prize in Cannes with Cleber Mendonça, and I did this film, and now I'm doing a film in Ohio. Today is my day off, and called Swan Song. I like to work in movies if they're interesting roles and different. I don't work in American TV shows because, you know, it's different. There are independent people, and I'm a lucky actor who works 20 years with Lars von Trier or with Gus Van Sant, you know, with a good director.
And that's the thing. I mean, I saw that you were in that film Baccarat. It was at the Cannes Film Festival, and you always seem to be very varied in your roles. And, you know, while you star in a lot of horror films and films like that, you never seem to be typecast to just one genre, you know, like penned in any way. Why do you think that is, that you've managed to be in all the kind of, whether it's Hollywood or art house or horror, whatever it is?
Well, that's good, because that's interesting. You know, I meet people, I have maybe a film in competition in Venice next month, and it's a Czech Republic film, and it's Asma's book, The Painted Bird, which is written by Kosinski. And there, again, I play a miller, and, you know, in 1940, and that's interesting. It is, when I get a script, it doesn't matter how big the role is, I read it and see if I can do something to my own satisfaction. And that is very important, and that was also with Timo. And he asked me if I would be in the second Iron Sky. And we made already number 3 in China, called The Ark, and Andy Garcia and myself. So it's, you know. And on the other hand, I like to work with the same directors that did, as Wim Wenders or Herzog, because you know each other already. So the whole getting to know each other, it's not there anymore, and that's wonderful. I mean, they also filmed the films I made, which I wouldn't work with the director again. But, you know, but I'm lucky that Iron Sky, he's one of the directors I will always work with. With Gus Van Sant, I always will work, and with Lars von Trier also.
Is there particular traits in a director that makes you want to work with them time again, like Timo, like von Trier, like Van Sant?
Yeah, because I like the way they direct. You see, there is also people like, I never have asked the director, I would like to work with you. I met David Lynch, and he's one of my favorite director, but I didn't ask him, I want to work with you. So work with the same director, as I said before, it's, you know each other already. It's two friends meeting again and doing something again, maybe different role, but that is the good thing for me. I like to work with the same director over and over again.
And I was going to ask, I mean, obviously you've had an amazing career over many decades. Is it the variety you were talking about earlier that keeps you motivated? What keeps you motivated in your acting career, you know, like 50 years into it plus.
Well, the thing is, I'm going with the modern technology. When I used to make movies 50 years ago, or even 73, Dracula and Frankenstein, there was no monitor. The director did not see already the film on the monitor. They had to make it a film on real film, and then they have to develop it, and then they went to see it, and everybody was nervous, thinking, I hope it did work. Today, it's modern technology. Today, you have a chip which is very tiny, maybe one inch by 2 inch, and there is 1.5 hour material on it, and you put it on a hard drive, and you have, it's so much easier than filming. But I like it the modern way, because if a director sees it on the monitor, he sees it right away. And if he doesn't like it, he can do it directly again.
You mentioned Blood from Dracula and Flesh from Frankenstein there. Obviously, you've worked a lot in horror. What is it about the horror genre that attracts you?
Well, you don't have to ask. You have to ask Paul Morrissey, the director of Dracula and Frankenstein. He was the director for Andy Warhol. Andy Warhol did not direct me. He presented the film. And I was in an airplane, and I talked to somebody next to me. I didn't know who he was. It was Paul Morrissey. And I told him, he asked me what I'm doing, and I said, I'm an actor. And he said, give me your number. And then I said, who are you? And he said, my name is Paul Morrissey. I'm the director for Andy Warhol. And a couple of months later, I got a call, and it said, I'm Paul from the crew member for the airplane. I'm doing in Cinecittà in Rome. I'm doing Frankenstein in 3D and Dracula, and I have a little role for you. And I said, oh, great. What do I play? That's Frankenstein. So things all work like that.
That was a very random meeting. Starred in a bunch of iconic horror movies. Obviously, you had a famous supporting role in Suspiria. I was wondering if you had seen the remake. I know I saw an interview with you that you didn't seem that fussed that they were remaking the film.
Well, you know, it's the same thing. A remake of The Kingdom, and Stephen King did write the Lars von Trier story, and they wanted me in the film, and I spoke to Lars, and Lars said, you are in the original, you don't want to be in the copy. And it was the same thing with Suspiria. I know Dario, I made Suspiria, and I made with him the film The Third Mother, Asia Argento starring. And so I haven't seen the movie. I don't know how it is. But no, I don't like to be in remakes.
Don't like to.
Especially not if I'm in the original.
Okay. You don't want to retread the same ground, because you've done that.
Sorry to interrupt, but we're running out of time. We have time for one more question. Thank you.
Okay. Yes,
one more question.
You've played a lot of villains in your career. They say that villains always get the best lines. Would you agree with that? What do you love about playing villains?
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, the devil was an angel, and you have to be good to play a villain. And that is, for me, the same thing. I'm working, I rescue animals, I work in the garden a lot, and in California, and when I get an offer to play a villain, I really have fun. And that is, you know, the more evil, the better, because I'm not evil.
Oh, That's a great way to finish the interview. Thank you very much for your time, Udo. And it's okay. Great to have you on the podcast.
Okay, Scott.
All right, great. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The great Udo Kier there, who I'd like to thank once again for being on the show. And I would equally like to thank Timo for coming on this episode. I hope you enjoyed our little Iron Sky The Coming Race interview special. And if you did, the best way you can support the show is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Radio Public. Also, look out for our brand new episode coming in just a few days on Monday, where I am chatting to Canadian director G. Patrick Condon. Until then, though, see ya!